Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former three-time All-Pro NFL cornerback, and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Is Danny and Dusty.
What in God's name is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
With Danny Murray and Dusty, the Fan Man Hera.
What ruckus? I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app.
Can you describe the ruckus, sir?
And 1080.
Don't mess with the bull, young man. You'll get the horns.
The Fan.
Hour number two of a Schultzy and Will edition of Danny and Dusty here on Sports Radio 1080, The Fan, 99.5 HD2, the Odyssey app, YouTube, and Twitch for all the kids and adults watching on the streaming services as well. Hi there. Good to see everybody. We are here talking everything about Oregon v. Ohio State in the Rose Bowl, as well as the rest of the college football playoff. The quarterfinals getting going tonight. You can actually catch all the action on our sister station starting at 4 p.m. over on 910 ESPN. You got Penn State v. Boise State in the Verbo Fiesta Bowl, and we'll see who wins. Looks like it's going to be a Penn State victory. They are favored. I think the line's been going down. It was 11.5 at this point, at a point this morning. I believe it's now down to 10.5 or 10, and the total, which was at 50.5 to start the morning, that has gone up a bunch a bit as well. We're trying to get out to Dusty Hera right now. Of course, he is down in Pasadena with the Oregon Ducks, although he did say that he was going to be there setting up, so might have to be a little bit flexible. I know that he's there with the rest of the broadcasting crew, Jerry Allen, Mike Jorgensen. I would assume that Joey Mack is down there as well. They're just spending a lot of time getting everything set up. And yeah, Will, that's okay. If we can't get him, he said that he will be able to come on later in the show, but we might have to be flexible. So if we don't have Dusty now, we'll push him back. That's okay. I still got more Dan Lanning audio to play, and we still have to get to a position-by-position breakdown for Oregon v. Ohio State. So looking at this matchup, one thing that people are concerned about, and actually just saw a comment about this on the Vancouver Ford text line, 503-864-6FAN. I'm really worried about the layoff for the Ducks. Ohio State, they've played. They're warmed up. I've been ready to go best you can, but you don't want to tackle or have much contact for 25 days before a football game. Watch out. They're going to come out flying. It could be a long day. I hear what you're saying. A lot of people are worried about the gap that Oregon has between games, and that's definitely something to talk about going forward in the future of the college football bracket, you know, and the playoff with teams possibly being added. Will it go from a 12 to a 14 team bracket? Probably to 16. I would say probably there as well. How will the bye schedules be worked out? Can you limit time or eliminate some of the time between the first and the second round? Definitely some good questions to ask, because yeah, that 25-day layoff, Will, you understand why you have questions, because the Vancouver Ford texter actually making a great point about, you know, the lack of hitting and the physicality that you're obviously used to in football. Anthony Newman made this point on Ducks Roundtable last night as well. Being off for this amount of time and not being able to get as physical as you normally are used to, and then having to go right back to game speed, it's a little daunting. And I even heard Urban Meyer, former Ohio State and Florida and Utah head coach, on with Colin Cowherd this morning here on The Fan, and he was even talking about practicing and preparing, you know, to face off against such a talented team. You got to do so with the ones. You can't do it with a scout team. Like the cornerbacks and defensive backs or all the defense for Ohio State, they're facing off against Emeka Ikbuka and Jeremiah Smith. They're not facing off against the scout team. They've got to prepare to basically face, you know, the talent that they are going to see at game time. And not having that talent, not having that physicality for such a long layoff, definitely scary. So I understand what you're saying, and I'm a little scared of that as well, but I think Oregon's talent can overcome that. One person that I do believe also thinks Oregon's talent can overcome the 25-day layoff between games is our own 1080 The Fan's Dusty Hara. Dusty, he is live from Pasadena. Thank you so much for taking the time to come on with us, man. You must be busy setting up. How are the vibes down there? It must be a fun feeling on the eve of the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, today's been really cool. We're in the stadium. I'm currently talking to you guys from row 2, seat 2 in section 20 of the Rose Bowl, right at the 25-yard line.
Hell yeah.
Of the Rose Bowl, and it's pretty cool here. The stealth bomber coordinators are down on the field right now going through all of their final preparations of when the flyover is going to happen. The sun is shining. It's been like gray and gloomy down here in LA, but today's a beautiful day, and it's awesome, man. It's awesome.
Dusty, there's a lot of talk right now about how the travel might affect the team. How has the travel affected the team? How have they been practicing? What does their schedule look like? Have they tried to set everything up as close to when the Rose Bowl will actually be played so that they're ready to go in prime time? What has the team done?
No, it's creatures of habit. You know how it goes, right? They're trying to keep everything as normal as they possibly can. And usually you don't go a few days before a trip. Usually if you're traveling anywhere, you're going the day before and you get a walkthrough and then boom, it's game time. But I think that this abbreviated Rose Bowl week, it actually mirrors a little bit of what they did when they went to Michigan, right? Where they were there for a couple of days. It was having to go from a hotel to an off-site, go and practice because they left on a Thursday instead of a Friday for that Michigan game. And so it kind of feels a little bit like that as far as the routine is going for them. And without having as many events, and that's one of the things that, the Rose Bowl, it used to be a week full of events leading up to the game where, Disneyland, Lowry's Beef Bowl, that's all been cut down, and it's really just kind of media availability in the mornings and then practice. So they've been keeping it really kind of as normal as they possibly can. They haven't been practicing like at times that are out of their schedule or out of their norm. But I heard Jordan, you talking earlier, like there's a big deal with a layoff as long as the ones the Ducks have had. It's been a really long time since they played football, and that will be interesting to see. The rest versus rust conversation that we always talk about with the NFL teams in the playoffs and getting byes. Now we're going to try to see if it has an impact here in the college football playoffs.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see in this first iteration of a 12-team playoff, and then interesting even further going forward if they decide to shorten that gap or how they mess with games to maybe make it a little bit easier and not have as much of a rust versus rest convo. So compared to their first matchup, Dusty, what do you think could go differently between Oregon and Ohio State? I know they've got Jordan Birch back now. Ohio State has a couple of big injuries on the offensive line. What do you think is going to be the big difference from their first game to today, or tomorrow, excuse me?
Well, and that's the thing is when you get into big games like this, right, it's the unknown. And we saw a lot of those weird plays kind of happen in that first game. And it happened on both sides of the football, right? Whether it's guys fumbling that don't usually fumble or weird, quirky plays, and the breaks go one team's way. And that's what happens when you have games that are in the margins. And I think that special teams are going to play a huge factor in this game, as they did the very first time. But I think one of the big things, and I said this last night on Ducks Roundtable, and it's a big one in my mind because we were waiting through those first 6 weeks of, when is Noah Whittington going to turn the corner? When is Noah Whittington going to be the guy that we saw prior to his injury against Colorado last year? And we saw that not necessarily in the Ohio State game, but the week after in that Purdue game, the catch in the end zone, the one-handed catch. And then from there on, he's been a different kind of running back. He's been running behind his pads. He's trusting his body, and I think it may be trusting his knee a little bit more. But I think having a 1-2 punch as opposed to just Jordan James, who was magnificent in that first matchup, now you have two of those backs that you wholeheartedly trust and rely on, and I think that is a huge one. I also think what's been interesting is I saw an article today about, Blake Purchase kind of using this year as a redshirt year. I forgot that he these guys that come in, they play, and he's used it as a learning experience. I don't think that it's going to play a big factor in a game like this. Some of those guys that only played in four games and used a redshirt year, but now that you're in the postseason, they can play in every game moving forward. And what are those, maybe some of those guys that we haven't seen a whole heck of a lot of, right? Like, you know, Jay Harris, who's a big body running back. Do we see a little bit more of him and him getting some touches because he's been in the system, he's played in a few games? Those types of guys are going to be the ones. Look, in a game like this, we know what the knowns are, right? We know what Dylan Gabriel is. We know what Tez Johnson is. We know what Jordan Burch is and Will Howard and Emeka Okwuka and Jeremiah Smith, those guys. The guys who turn games like this on their head usually are the ones that are the role players, and they come up with big games. And last time it was Evan Stewart, who went off in that game against Ohio State in Austin Stadium. And he's not a player on the margins or a role player because he's got star potential in him, but it's going to be some guys like those. And, you know, do we see Trayshawn Holden playing a full game and what that means for Oregon's offense, kind of opening things up? I think the role players are going to play a massive, massive, massive factor in this game.
Dusty, on Wednesday night, when we call you for the Ducks postgame scoreboard show, you're going to tell us that the Ducks won because of what?
Oh, man. Dude, if I knew that, I would not be working in radio. I'd be getting paid a lot more money.
It'd be like a college GM, football. Right?
You know, like that was, but you know I think, I know exactly what you mean. And I think it is because Oregon wins the turnover battle and because they run the ball and control the pace of the game, not tempo. Chip Kelly may try to up the tempo like Penn State did against Oregon and get Oregon's defense on their heels a little bit. I think it's controlling the pace of the game and knowing that that's an electric offense on the other side of the field. I think turnovers and being able to run the football, it's two of the most basic things in all of football, but that's what, like, everybody wants to look for this, you know, silver bullet of how these games are going to be won. History tells us turnovers and the team that can run the football effectively, those are the ones that win big games. And that's what it comes down to when you get into, you know, whether it's a 12-team playoff or a 4-team playoff, the team that can run the ball and create extra opportunities for their offense is usually one that wins.
We're talking with 1080 The Fan Zone, Dusty Hera, host here on 1080, as well as the sideline reporter for Oregon football, host of the Odyssey podcast, the program as well, all things Oregon Ducks from Dusty Hera. One more question for you, Dusty. Can you speak to the growth that you've seen from Oregon as the season's gone on? You've been with them from game one. You've been really close to these players. You've seen the maturity. You've seen them come together. I mean, we heard stories about Dylan Gabriel's van taking wide receivers around the state, you know, before this season. We've gotten really cool updates on what the team's doing and how they've been growing together with the Ducks Weekly stuff on Oregon's social media. But what do you see that's different about this team now as opposed to the start of the year?
This is a weird thing to say, but they've gotten so much depth back. Because you think about where they were at the beginning of the year, where remember how large the Matthew Bedford injury loomed,
yeah.
Where he was a transfer from Indiana and everybody was saying, hey, that guy's going to slide in. He's going to be a starting guard for this team. Well, what nobody was really talking about is that Nashad Strother and Dave Iuli at the beginning of the year, those first couple of games where Oregon struggled out of the gate, they weren't healthy, right? And then Nashad Strother comes back and he plays the entire second half against Boise State and the offensive line looked completely different. You also look at, you know, the Nixon, they have not had and you can knock on wood here, the catastrophic injury this season where a main piece goes down and is done for the year, but they've had their nicks and bumps and bruises and guys like, you know, Tez Johnson missing a couple games, Justice Lowe, he misses two games at the end of the year. Well, we've seen, I think the biggest growth is that this team at the 12 team playoff is finally at full strength because guys like Dave Iuli, Nashad Strother, they weren't there at the beginning of the year, but as this team has kind of gone on and it benefits you to win some games decidedly where you're not having to grind out and play your starters, you know, 80 or 90 snaps in a game. And that helps with kind of the longevity and getting health along the way. I also think that a big one is the mastery of the offense from Dylan Gabriel, where even in that week six matchup, and I think the same can be said for Will Howard too on the opposite side for Ohio State, right? These are two guys that they came into brand new systems with expectations that were through the roof. And it is so hard for a quarterback to come in and just master an offense from, you know, winter and spring ball through a summer and just say, nope, this offense is going to be humming and it's going to be the real deal. I think both of these offenses are much more dangerous and much more explosive now that both of these quarterbacks have played a full season, and they know this offense like the back of their hands, both Will Howard and Dylan Gabriel. I think that's massive growth for this team because they can check you into the right run play, they can get you into the right passing play, and knowing where to go and really mastering how this offense is supposed to be operated. I think that's one of the biggest growths that we've seen from Oregon.
Dusty, one last one. How are you and the family doing down in the Rose Bowl? I know you guys are taking some extra time. Are you taking the kids down to the Rose Bowl? Do they understand the gravitas of getting to go to the granddaddy of them all? And then are you hitting some local LA spots?
Yeah, dude, this has been awesome to have, you know, my wife and kids came down to the game too. And, you know, just seeing, you know, their faces, they got to meet some of the players and, you know, they got to meet Coach Lanning last night. And
wow.
It's been awesome. It's been really fun to kind of see them and understand they are at the age, you know, we're at, you know, 10 and 8, where they kind of understand how the magnitude of what is happening. And it's really cool. And my son met Jordan Birch last night, and I kid you not, he is a massive human being.
Yes.
He walked up to him and he looked at him from his toes all the way up to his head. And my son was just like in awe of this just sheer size of Jordan Birch. So that's been awesome to see. And yeah, we're down, you know, we're staying near LA Live. So, you know, we had, you know, the Kings game on the first night that we came into town. We didn't go to it, but we saw everything on it that was going on outside. I mean, LA is a massive city, and it's been really cool to kind of be out here and have everybody down here. It's going to be awesome.
That sounds like so much fun, Dusty. Definitely jealous and so happy, though, for you and your family getting to experience that. Thank you for taking the time. Really quickly, what's your prediction for the game? Oregon currently a 2.5-point underdog.
Yeah, I think this one's going to come down to the wire. I think if anybody has any sort of definitive answer of who's going to win or how it's going to play out, I mean, they're just shooting from the hip. So I'm going to go with, you know, the team that won the first one. I mean, we've seen in the big matchups of games of this magnitude, games that have been really close and two heavy hitters, Georgia, Texas, it went Georgia's way two times this year. You know, Oregon, Washington last year, it went Washington's way last year twice. And I'm going to go with, you know, history will tell you that it's more of a crapshoot, and maybe it goes to the team that lost the first one just as often as it does, you know, the team that won the first one. But I'm going to go with Oregon in this one because they're playing really good team football right now, and they're healthy and playing at a really high clip.
All right, Dusty, I like it. I think I'm siding with you on this one, my friend. 1080's Dusty Hera checking in live from Pasadena. Appreciate it. Have a great call tomorrow, and enjoy your time down there, man.
All right. Have a good one, fellas.
All right, that's Dusty Hera, not only host here on 1080 The Fan of Danny and Dusty, but of course, Oregon sideline reporter, does great job during the games, giving all that up-to-the-minute info, as well as host of Odyssey's podcast, The Program. All right, we got to continue this Ducks conversation. Will and I are going to go through a position-by-position breakdown to see which team has the advantage, if any, in the Rose Bowl. It's Schultze and Will in for Danny and Dusty on Sports Radio 1080 The Fan.
This is Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and Portland's sports leader, 1080, The Fan.
We are just over 24 hours away from kickoff between Oregon and Ohio State in the Rose Bowl presented by Prudential. That's right, Oregon 13-0, top seeded in the college football playoff, facing off against the 8th seed Ohio State Buckeyes. And Will, we've talked a lot about the defense versus Oregon's high-powered offense. Of course, Ohio State's super, super good at limiting big plays and limiting attack through the air. Oregon was able to get something going on the ground against Ohio State in their last matchup, but a lot of that success for Oregon was due to their touchdown passes that Ohio State just really normally doesn't give up. Looking here, and I see the text on the Vancouver Ford text line that says position by position. Seriously, good Lord. We're not breaking down every position, okay? We're going like QBs, running backs, wideouts, and then defense as a whole. Hear me out here.
Why do I have notes for the third long snapper? What the hell?
I'm sorry, Will. I guess I told you to prep incorrectly. So, I didn't even know that each team had a third long snapper, so that's pretty good.
How are we gonna break down the buck and the stud of each defense? Wait a minute.
That's not what I want to do. The whole idea here is just to try to see, mostly on the skill position side, which team, if either, has an advantage. And we're going to do this quickly here. So, Texter, trust me, it's not every single 22 positions on the field.
Naming all
100
players.
Let's go, baby.
Every single one of them.
What's the 112th walk-on's name? I don't even know at this point. All right, so...
Young, scrappy kid.
No kidding.
Just slightly undersized.
Yeah. Well, that's like Marco Rubio's kid, right, for Florida. But he has a scholarship. So if my arguments towards nepotism are to be consistent, I should not like that. And I don't. So, but I digress. Okay, so the battle position by position, at least in the skills positions, looking at the quarterback for Ohio State versus Oregon, obviously we've been talking about Will Howard versus Dylan Gabriel. They both actually have a pretty similar, the exact completion percentage rate, just over 73%, 73.2%, have almost 9 yards per attempt, Will. I think really, you know, the stats look pretty similar here, but I think the edge will go to Dylan Gabriel, but it's just a slight edge. Like I said, these guys have a lot of experience. They're, you know, two of the best quarterbacks in the college football playoff. As you said, Dylan Gabriel is the best quarterback in the college football playoff. I agree, and when it comes to crunch time, I would want Dylan Gabriel over Will Howard running my offense. So slight lean there to Oregon and Dylan Gabriel at the quarterback position.
I've been a bit accused of being a Will Howard hater. I don't hate Will Howard. I just think that there's a chance that they might have been better if they had Kyle McCord this year. And just in how much you think when you get a former Kansas State quarterback in Will Howard, a Kansas State quarterback that ran all the time, gets matched up with a Chip Kelly offense after everything that he did at Oregon, after everything that he did in Philadelphia. When he had his most success, it was when he had a quarterback that could run the football. He never has him do it. And I obviously Chip Kelly has forgot more football than I've ever known or will ever know. But it feels like they don't use him to his fullest strengths. They don't use him to his most potential. And when you don't use a quarterback to their strengths, you don't play to their strengths, you don't design an offense to his strengths, I feel like you're leaving meat on the bone. Now, that being said, what Ohio State was able to do against Tennessee's secondary, a secondary that going into that game, myself included, like I loved that Tennessee defense.
Yeah.
And as you start going back through their schedule, you kind of start to look at it and realize who's the best quarterback that they played. It might have been Will Howard. Like, if you go back through and look at it, your next argument is Carson Beck, Jalen Milroe. So when I have been kind of attacking Will Howard this year, or critiquing his play is probably the better way to say it, it's because I hold him to the standard of the other elite quarterbacks or how that they use him that have come through Ohio State in the past. And it almost feels like this year, maybe you don't have a true elite quarterback, or the best quarterbacks that you have aren't on the best teams. And so Will Howard is just kind of the best option. I think when I look at would I rather have Howard or Gabriel, it's Gabriel. And I've had my critiques of Gabriel as well, but in the biggest moments, when the lights are brightest, Dylan Gabriel has showed up, and he's been a large reason, if not the main reason, why Oregon has won their games against Ohio State, against Penn State, in a game against Wisconsin where it looked kind of weird, and all of a sudden it was getting sketchy. He didn't have a great game, but in the biggest moment, when it was fourth down, he made the big throw, and he got the completion, right? Will Howard, when they beat Ohio State, or when Ohio State beat Penn State, that wasn't Will Howard. That's because they ran the football extremely well. Will Howard, if I remember right, he threw a touchdown to the other team, right? That was the first pick six to start the game. So When I look at Ohio State, it's not that Howard shrinks in big moments. He just doesn't rise to the same level that Dylan Gabriel does.
I hear that. Yeah, I love that you're on Dylan Gabriel's side of this, too. Running backs seem pretty equal between Quinshon Judkins and Travion Henderson versus Jordan James and Noah Whittington. Oregon's carried the ball about 60 more times this season. They only have like 100 more yards, and Ohio State's yards per carry average is about a yard higher. So it's a pretty even production slate. If you look at, like, you know, straight across, if they had the exact amount of carries, obviously Ohio State holds a little bit higher of a yards per carry average, but I think James and Whittington are a little bit more talented. So I'm going to say you lean there on Oregon's side as well for both the quarterback and the running back. Wide receivers, though, Will, this goes to Ohio State, and it's obvious why. Yes, Tez Johnson, Terrence Ferguson, Evan Stewart, Trayshawn Holden, you even throw Kenyon Sadiq in there, are really good, but you compare Emeka Igbuka, Jeremiah Smith, Cornell Tate, and G. Scott Jr. to those guys, and there's no competition, especially with the young Jeremiah Smith and Igbuka, who looks like an NFL wide receiver already. Those two are the best receivers in the country, hands down, in my opinion.
I would actually give the running back room to Ohio State.
You would?
I would. If you're not, so I think that you have a more than a slight edge at quarterback. I think that Ohio State's running back room between Judkins and Henderson has a slight jump ahead of Oregon's running back room. And that's not to hate on Oregon's running back room. I love Jordan James. And I think that the way that he runs the football with as much aggression that he has, that's going to translate well into the NFL. And don't be shocked if Oregon has a lead and they have the ball with 2 minutes left, they're going to ice the game and they're going to do it by giving the ball to Jordan James because of how physical he runs. And he can run through that first arm tackle. That being said, Judkins and Henderson, they work well off of each other, and they've done a really good job this year of lightening the load on the other one. In the past, you've seen Judkins kind of slow down at the end of the year. You've seen Henderson slow down at the end of the year. When they played Tennessee, they looked like they were back to midseason form. They looked healthy. They were moving.
Yeah.
They were outrunning people, right? Again, against a very good Tennessee Volunteer defense. So I have a slight lean towards them. Again, in the wide receiver room, Tez Johnson, Evan Stewart, fantastic, phenomenal.
Yeah.
You have to lean Smith and Igbuka.
You have to.
But where the big gap comes in is on the offensive line. Oregon's offensive line is a big deal. They are better. They are ahead of Ohio State.
And healthy.
They are healthy. This offensive line was a semifinalist for the Joe Moore Award. Ohio State's offensive line was not. They are injured. They lost the best center in the country. He's gone. He's injured. He's done for the year. You're on your third string left tackle. Now, has the third string left tackle come in and he was an All-American at guard or an All-Conference player at guard? He moves out to tackle. Is he a good player? 100%. He's going to have a good NFL career, but he's a guard playing tackle. That's not natural for him.
No.
And you're coming away with some nicks and some scrapes on the right side of your offensive line as well. They're going to play, but they're a little beat up, right? That's where I think Oregon can make the most hay. Because if this offensive line can keep Dylan Gabriel up and they can stop Ohio State from hitting Jordan James or hitting Whittington until they get to at least the line of scrimmage, those running backs are going to fall forward. Dylan Gabriel, with time, has shown he will find the open man. And if he doesn't find him, he'll create a play himself. So I don't think there's a big gap until you get to the offensive line on the offensive side of the football. Okay. And I'd actually lean slightly more in a couple position groups towards Ohio State. It's just there's such a big gap between that offensive line in both rooms.
And to wrap it up quickly with the defensive side of the ball, their stats, other than red zone defense, look pretty similar. 40 sacks to 39 sacks, Oregon for Ohio State. 12 interceptions to 9 interceptions. But Ohio State only allows teams to score at a 59.38% clip in the red zone. Oregon has given up 86% of the time they have given up scores in the red zone. So that right there would tell you Ohio State's defense, just because of the stats, are better than Oregon's, but I would say it's still close, but it's actually not that close. If you get down into, you know, that red zone and you're able to hold the other team, that's a pretty big weapon, and Oregon is obviously not able to hold the other team in the red zone. So
It's going to be key on how does Oregon's D-line fare against the run. The reason Penn State was in that game in the Big Ten Championship is because they were able to knock Oregon's offensive or defensive linemen off the ball, and they were able to pin them in gaps.
Mm-hmm.
Once they pinned guys in gaps, Singleton and Allen, they were able to find the open holes in that inside zone run game. And then Drew Aller even started running a little bit in the plus one run game in the second half. Can this defensive line get into the backfield? It's a worse O-line than what you went against in Penn State. The other big thing, too, I trust Oregon's secondary more than I trust Ohio State's. Last time when Oregon played Ohio State, they made them earn it. How many big explosive touchdown plays do you remember? I don't remember any. I remember explosive runs. Mm-hmm. I remember explosive passes. But Oregon was able to limit them to just being a big play, a big gain, instead of a big touchdown. Ohio State, they weren't able to do that against Evan Stewart. They weren't. Yeah. Now, they're going to have a different game plan. They're going to bracket cover him, right? They're not going to leave Burke all on an island by himself with Stewart. But I just think when I look at the secondary, if they can limit the big play touchdown to just the big play, and the defensive line of Oregon, they can play on the other side of the line of scrimmage, and they can limit the big explosive run plays, keep those to a minimum, I like Oregon to eventually come away with a stop or two. That eventual stop or two is what's going to get them the victory and still get that over to hit.
All right, Will and I are going to give our final score predictions for the Rose Bowl along with all of the college football playoff games. We're going to do that coming up at 2 o'clock. But right now, let's shift gears to find out who gets the worst day on the web. That's coming up next. But first, here's Will with SportsCenter.
It's time for today's worst day on the web with Danny and Dusty on Odyssey and 1080 The Fan.
Well, that sucks.
Well, today's worst day on the web is one that I am so excited to hand out. Oh my God, as a college football fan and a fan of the Big Ten, formerly the Pac-12, I love to see SEC teams just getting owned and having to eat crow. And apparently Alabama's fans are going to having to be doing a little bit of that after today's matchup against Michigan in the ReliaQuest Bowl. It didn't go so well. Michigan beat Alabama 19-13. That is right. Unranked Michigan from the Big Ten beating number 11 Alabama 19-13. Yes, this is the same Alabama that was bitching about not being included in the college football playoff as a three-loss SEC team. Jalen Milroe had three turnovers all in the first quarter. Let's play one of them for you right now.
Milroe, back to pass. Ball comes out. It's on the turf. Picked up by Michigan. Again. Milroe was winding up to throw. He got it stripped away. I think it was horrible. The quarterback who got it out. Another Alabama turnover. They've run 10 plays, and they have three turnovers.
It's unbelievable. Two fumbles, including that one by Jalen Milroe, as well as a pick, all in the first 10 plays. So today's worst day on the web, double bird to you, Alabama Crimson Tide football.
It's beautiful, right? Like, once you start getting into the debate of, like, well, who deserves it more? Who should have it more?
We are in instead of you because we're better.
This is exactly what had to happen. One of the other teams that was complaining about it, South Carolina, they're the hottest team in college football right now. Yeah, they're down 7-3 at halftime to Illinois.
I love that. Wow, Illinois' defense is holding strong. Okay.
Illinois is not a bad football
team.
Luke Altmyer is not a bad QB. And so I love when the SEC gets all high and mighty because they go into this narrative, Paul Feinbaum, of, well, we lost because we're so good.
God.
Our schedule is so difficult that we have to be given an extra loss.
You don't live in the same universe as us, dude.
Well, God. There was a point in time where the best, like truly, truly the best teams were in the SEC.
When you think about it,
the best two teams were in the SEC for a good like 2 or 3 year run.
Yes.
Alabama, Georgia, those were the best two teams. The difference is that you have to look at it through the lens of every single year is different, especially now with the transfer portal and just the amount of upheaval and movement that can happen. every single year you have to go into it as best that you can, because you're never going to fully be able to get away with your bias, right? There are teams that, there are people that voted Michigan as a top 10 team this year. Remember, when Texas beat Michigan, Michigan was ranked in the top 10 in the country.
Without a quarterback.
Right, without a quarterback, because it was Michigan.
Yeah.
It was Michigan. Michigan is expected to be Michigan, so Michigan will be good. We have to do our best to come into the season without bias and be able to look at a team and go, yeah, that's Alabama, but that's not really Alabama. This is the weakest the SEC has been in a while, and some of it is Monday morning quarterbacky, and it's not entirely fair, because what would Georgia be with Carson Beck? We don't truly know, and we'll never know, right? We got to see the season with Carson Beck, and there were moments where they didn't look good, but there were moments where they looked like they were the best team in the country. They blew out Clemson. They smacked Tennessee, right? The first half against Alabama looked really bad. They came back against that same Alabama team, right? They came back and found a way to be in and win both games against Texas. Now, was that because of Carson Beck? No, it was because of the defense. But if Carson Beck is the starter and you have a national championship coach in Kirby Smart, I don't think that he's going to ride with Carson Beck just because he's the one he picked at the beginning. It's because he thinks he's his best option to win. And now you don't have that. But it feels like, and maybe it's because I've watched too much Big Ten football this year, the best three teams are in the Big Ten, and the one team that can kind of upset that is probably Notre Dame.
So you wouldn't even put Georgia in the conversation then?
Not until we see Stockton. They're their own category
right
now. I have to see how they perform with Stockton. That defense is good enough to win a game in the playoffs against the better teams. Maybe one, maybe two. I mean, shoot. I truly do think that Texas, when they're playing at their peak, is probably amply ranked top five team in the country, probably. Yeah. That seems fair for them. Georgia beat them twice. They didn't win that first game because of Carson Beck. In fact, they didn't win that second game because of Carson Beck. They won that second game because of their defense. They won that first game because of their defense. That's how good that defense is.
Yeah.
I just don't believe that they can go on a run where they win three games just with that defense. It's not the same Georgia defense from 3 years ago, and that's because, frankly, high school players aren't going to go and sit on the bench for 4 years until they finally get their time to play. They're not going to sit for three. They're going to sit for two. Some won't even sit for one, right?
Dante Moore.
Right. So I just don't think you have the truly elite teams, because the big, bad SEC, they're not hoarding anybody anymore.
I know that's fair. It's been a lot of flip-flopping of conferences and big power conferences, schools switching from one to the other. That's definitely true. Alabama, too, it's not like they really... If they were the fifth team in a four-team college playoff, even though it's Alabama, I would say they have a gripe. Like, this is a 12-team playoff that we're talking about. We expanded it to allow for extra scenarios to happen, to allow for these teams that were on the fringes before that never would have had an opportunity, to allow them to get in. And frankly, all we're seeing, Will, is we're not seeing the never was as get a shot. We're only seeing the has-beens and the other blue chip elite teams that have already been there getting added to the pile at the end of the year. Instead of, an Ohio State, an Oregon, and a Georgia, it's an Ohio State, Oregon, Georgia, Boise State, who's always been an upset monster in the past. And you look at all the other schools that are in this, Notre Dame, they've been a powerhouse for a bit. It's not including anybody outside of an SMU, but I mean, they can pay people now, right? It's pretty ironic, and actually I think it's very fitting that as soon as they are legally allowed to pay players, they're looking as good and as prominent as they were back in the 80s during the Pony Express days when they were doing it all under the table. So really, I don't see, I see the opportunity for more teams to go in here, but I don't see the argument from Alabama. I'm sick of hearing from their fans that think they should be 12-0, 13-0 every single year. 9-4 in Kalen DeBoer's first season. Glorious. Just glorious.
Yeah, I mean, the bad Twitter quote is, they're going to show Kalen DeBoer, right?
And, why?
Well, it's funny.
No, I get it is funny, but why would you even want to think that is my question.
I think that there is a different... I mean, it's not unheard of. Coach O, he won a national title, and he was out 2 years later.
And
Kalen DeBoer hasn't done anything. Not at Alabama, at least, right?
I know.
An Alabama fan, I mean, you can look right now in the YouTube chat. Jake's a big Alabama fan. He doesn't. He's upset right now at Kalen DeBoer. And I frankly think that he has the right to be. Like, that guy was brought in to be your quarterback whisperer. And you have an impressive talent in Jalen Milroe.
Mm-hmm.
Jalen Milroe has the opportunity, has all the tools. But he doesn't always complete all of them. He's great at the deep ball. He's great at running, right? He's great at using his legs. He's okay at short passes. He's horrible at the middle passes. He's horrible at using the middle of the field. At times, his decision-making is bad. Isn't that what DeBoer was brought in to change? I'm not saying it's the right move. There are people right now that if Ohio State doesn't win the national championship are going to call for Ryan Day's head.
Well,
should he be fired?
I think so, frankly. He was kind of gifted that job in the first place, in my opinion.
There are a few that have the winning percentage that he does. All I'm saying is...
But there are a few that have been given the toolbox that he has for the last 7 years.
That is a route that people will go down, right? 100%. And so I just think that, one, you have to remember that fans sometimes get a little bit too fired up, have a little too much of emotional stake into it.
Me included, I will admit that.
But I also love that we get to dunk on the SEC again and again and again.
Yeah, because screw you, Lane Kiffin.
If they had just taken care of business, if they had just done their job, this wouldn't be an issue.
Nope.
They would still be playing right now. But they didn't.
Just win, baby. That's kind of the whole idea, right?
Well, it shuts everyone up, too. Finally shuts everyone up, unless Lane Kiffin wins, I'm sure they will win in their bowl game.
Well, it shuts everybody up except Paul Feinbaum and Kirk Herbstreit, right? Who say the best teams should be in the 12-team playoff regardless of record.
Well, again, there are a lot of arguments that people have made in the past about who should be playing where.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go back and you look at it 2 years later and you go, yeah, why was I doing that? I was just in the heat of the moment.
For sure.
I think that this year, those three SEC teams, there are going to be some analysts that come back and go, yeah, why was I doing that? Like, that was dumb.
I need to do that. I hope we hear that from them. But today's worst day on the web, going to Alabama for their hubris all season and their loss to Michigan in the ReliaQuest Bowl after bitching because they didn't make the college football playoff. All right, coming up next, we're going to have some fun with audio. How far would you go to help one of your favorite pro golfers? It's 151 on the Fan.
Gangnam Style.
This is Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and Portland's sports leader, 1080, The Fan.
Final day of 2024 here on a Schulte and Will edition of Danny and Dusty on Sports Radio, 1080, The Fan. And we've got an oldie but goodie here from earlier this year. I wanted to revisit this audio because I saw it over the weekend and I could not stop laughing. I showed it to my wife. She could not stop laughing. And this actually happened back in May during the PGA Championship of 2024. But I wanted to ask the question, how far would you go to help your favorite golfer or pro athlete after hearing this? If y'all forgot, a spectator stripped down and hopped into the water to retrieve Adam Hadwin's club on the seventh hole during the PGA Championship. Take a listen.
How do you lose his club? On ESPN2. Can you get nude on two? I don't know how that works. So, all right.
How come he took everything off, but he didn't take his socks off?
I don't know. Okay. Got the club. Hey. Thanks.
Yeah, buddy.
I'm going to sign a glove or something? Anything? There's a towel.
I love the announcers just giving him ass because that kid, I think it was from Canada. It was found out later on, and Hadwin actually was one of his favorite golfers, I believe. Like, actually helping out, you know, like one of your favorite athletes sounds pretty cool. But dude hopped right into a body of water in his skivvies, but also with his socks on. I can't believe a person wouldn't take their socks off for this, because then you're walking around all soak-footed, essentially, for the rest of the day. That sounds awful. And if he wore socks, I know that he doesn't have sandals with him, so he's either going soggy shoe or sockless in the shoe, which is possibly worse at that point.
Well, in a shocking development, we're going to guess somewhere between 20 to 23-year-old bro didn't fully think through his decision to jump into the water. Like, that's awesome. That guy rocks. Don't think about it. Just go in there. Go help out, like, the golfer. It's a funny story. SVP on the call killed it.
Mm-hmm.
The only, like, Kevin Harlan does this when there's like streakers or people that jump onto the court when he's calling football games or basketball games. It's a brilliant move. And I understand why the TV networks have to not show it. It's funnier if you show it and you treat it like a play-by-play.
Damn
it
right.
Always will get me to laugh.
I mean, this is like, it's almost like when Joe Buck was getting sent like the cat videos during the pandemic, you know? You just get like these random events and an announcer, you know, calling that event sounds really funny. And yeah, SVP nailed it here because he gave this kid a little bit of props, but also the right amount of crap because he's asking, you know, like, oh, is Hadwin going to sign a glove for him or something? Like, I would hope that there's something coming my way more than just, like, you know, like a titleless ball or a putter.
It's funny that's the guy he chose to do it to.
I know. Like, it's Adam Hadwin. It's not like it's, Bryson DeChambeau or anybody.
Right. Like it,
and that's not even the top of the golf leaderboards.
I don't know that there's a single golfer. I don't know that there's a single athlete, frankly, that I'm jumping into the water for. I don't know. I might do it as like a funny bit in like my own brain of like, this would be kind of funny. Like, I'm going to go cannonball into the water and then go grab a golfer's golf club. I don't know that I'm like, oh man, Charlie Woods' golf club just ended up in the water. I better go save him. I better go help him.
I mean, if Edgar Martinez threw his bat into a body of water and he needed said bat back, I might be stupid enough to go and get it.
You
I wouldn't
think
have
so?
My socks on, though.
Well, how many water...
I mean, Jake, like, the Hater always wants me to take my shirt off, so there's a good opportunity to do so. Yeah, get Edgar to toss a bat into a body of water. I'll go get into my skivvies and get it.
But is there a river in T-Mobile Park? Like, not that I can think of. Like, unless someone misses a urinal, there's no rivers there.
I'm trying to think
of... where would the body of water be?
I mean, so this would be most likely a golfer, right? That you're having to help out, like, to get soaking wet for and then all of a sudden be naked on television. Like, that just... both don't sound like great ideas, but then to do it for somebody else, like... I get it. Like you said, what, he's 20, 21, 22, 23, so he's probably doing it that...
mid-20. That's for sure who is, like, really hyped and went and showed his frat bros, like, look at what I did.
He'll be talking about that to his grandkids, like, when he's, 60 years in the future. Frankly, I would, too. It's kind of a cool moment, but at the same time, gotta give him crap. Like, remember where you are. Am I more against helping in general or just not losing the socks part? I think I'd have to say I'm more against him not taking his socks off. That just, to me, seems so weird. I don't even sleep with socks. So I can't imagine you hopping into a body of water with socks on either.
Who sleeps with socks?
I don't know. I'm assuming some people do out there. 503-864-6FAN on the Vancouver Ford text line. I bet you if we posted a poll, there'd be at least 25% of people saying that they wear socks, Will. Absolutely. While they sleep.
I would be shocked. That seems like an astronomical number.
But wanted to have some fun with audio today. It's the end of 2024, so wanted to go back and give some love to one of my favorite events of the year. And actually, coming up at 2:20, we're going to do a little bit of that as well. Not only looking back at the sports year that was in 2024, but what is one sports tradition or rule that you would like to see change in 2025? Get those answers in now to the Vancouver Ford text line 503-864-6FAN, as well as the YouTube chat. And moving on, who do you think is going to win each quarterfinal matchup in the college football playoff? We'll give our picks coming up next. That's coming up on Danny and Dusty on Sports Radio 1080 The Fan.